And welcome to the final Inside the Ropes episode of the decade. People say that like it's meant to be very like, you know, the final one. It just happens to be the last one before 2020 begins. I'm Kenny. I'm here with Sandra. Hi, Sandra. How are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm okay. Yeah, it's not like there's not going to be another Inside the Ropes next week. There's always an Inside the Ropes. Like, there's always Inside the Ropes in some form every week for your ear holes to listen to. And we will be back. We'll be in the roaring 20s. When we join you next week. I mean, technically, we're going to join you again on the overrun in like a day. So, you know, there's more of us. There's more of us talking. Things are happening.
We are always talking. Today was the Rangers and Celtic game in the Scottish Premier League.
Oh, that's like
League.
The big one.
Yes. And I feel like most people who follow me on Twitter know that I support Rangers. But like, I'm not one of those weird people who's like, fuck Celtic at all. Like, I'm like, Celtic are top of the league. Celtic won the League Cup final, like, Celtic are the top. I get it. But, like, Rangers won at Celtic Park today for the first time in 9 years. It was a pretty big deal. I was over at my friend Jamie's watching it. We were very happy that Rangers won. But anyway, so I went over to Jamie's. And when you're in Glasgow, you kind of have to be careful if you like one or the other teams about what you wear, you know, kind of around the city. Because you never know, like, where you're going to be, you know. So anyway, so I had my Rangers top on, and I put like a hoodie on over it, and then the game happened. Rangers won 2-1, and then I stayed for a couple of drinks, and then I left, and I got on the subway. And when I got on the subway, a couple of Rangers, well, maybe like 4 or 5 Rangers fans got on. They were like very kind of rowdy and whatever. And then I had this moment where I realized I could do like a wrestling reveal here that nobody knows that I could do, because I have a Rangers top on underneath this. And they're all, like, you know, frantically screaming Rangers at each other in various forms. And I clocked eyes with one of the guys, and he was like, did you see the game? And I just, like, smirked and lifted my top, and they were like, ah! As if, like, Hogan had turned heel at Bash at the Beach. And it was, like, so much fun to do. Luckily, the poor bastard who had a Celtic top on had got off the stop before. Because I feel like if he had been there and had to endure these drunk idiots, he probably would not have enjoyed it as much. But yeah, it was a fun game, and you know, if you can take away the ridiculous parts of it, it was fun to be part of this weird old firm Sunday that we had. But I know that you hate Christmas, Sandra, but you are now past the Christmas holidays. How was it? Was it worse than usual? Was it better than usual? Was it as you expected? And how did you spend your time?
I survived it, which is good. The thing is, my hating Christmas doesn't have anything to do with, like, hating going to see my family or, like, hating most things. It's, like, it's just the Christmas of it all and the pressure of it all, right? So, like, the issue is that I am exhausted during the Christmas season, even if I don't do much. Like, thankfully, my husband gets it and understands that, like, the concept of me going out to purchase presents for people is just going to make me cry. Like, I cry myself to sleep most nights during the Christmas season anyway because I'm so tired. So he took care of a lot of that, which was good. I made it to all of the parties. I was late to a bunch of them, but that's okay. So yeah, I made it, and it was actually lovely. Like, Christmas Eve was unprecedented timeliness on the part of myself and Mr. Sandra. We got to my parents' house before either of my brothers, which has never happened before. Because I'm
in
a
your
pretty
face.
Chronically late. Yeah, like, I'm a pretty chronically late person, especially during Christmas, because, like, the anxiety of, like, going places for a Christmas thing. So we got there. And my parents live next to a church parking lot, and because, like, there are so many churches in Hudsonville, and it's really handy because we can always park there. And I got there, and there were no other cars. There were no cars in the driveway. There were no cars in the parking lot. And I was like, I know we were supposed to be here at 6, and it's like 5:55, because dinner's supposed to be at 6, so we were aiming to be there like a little bit before. And I'm like, did they park around the corner as a trick? Because that seemed more plausible than like us arriving early. But no, we were the first ones there. So we even took a picture in front of the Christmas tree with Mr. Sonder holding up a like first finger, like we got here first. And we laughed about that basically all night, because I am never early for anything. But it was really nice to just kind of hang out with the family. Hanging out with my nephews is my favorite thing about the Christmas season, because I get to see them a whole bunch. And normally, just like with my work schedule, I don't get to see people very often. So that's been a lot of fun. Like, the 3-year-old loves to help opening presents in the most dramatic fashion. The 1-year-old still doesn't understand the concept, but he's toddling around and walking and is adorable. So yeah, like that's been nice. And yesterday I had my mom's side of the family Christmas, and my grandma was looking pretty good. She's 91, and, you know, like, she's old, and we've almost lost her, like, a bunch of times. And it's kind of just really nice to see her looking good. So I hung out with her and chatted with her for a while, which was cool. And Christmas Day, we were at Mr. Saunders' parents' house, which is always very low-key, because they understand my whole, like, presents thing too, and they don't really expect anything. They're just like, no, come, we'll have dinner and open a few things from the resale store is usually what my mother-in-law gets me. And then we watched Almost Famous because we felt like it, and that was fun. We did get a record player. Mr. Sondra for some reason wanted a record player, and I didn't know that he had asked for this, and it's quite large, and I wasn't sure where we were going to put it. But then we spent a lot of Christmas going through old records at my in-law's house, and they had a lot of weird shit in their record collection, which doesn't surprise me. But there's like this one song we were listening to, and it was called Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, which was like from 42 or something.
Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition.
Legitimately, that's the name of the song. And the chorus is Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition and We'll All Stay Free.
Is it like a tune or is it just weird?
It's very like big band, old like 1940s style. It's quite catchy. It was in my head all night, actually, and I was like, I don't want it. No, get it away.
Okay. Wait, so but you survived.
Yeah, I survived, and it was, I mean, overall it was lovely. I have like, we're doing actually like birthday type dinner tonight with my family, and which is nice because it doesn't involve presents or doing much of anything. It's just like one kind of last meal with just my immediate family, like my parents and my brothers and my nephews and my sister-in-law and stuff. And so it's like the one more social thing that I have to do, and it's all good. Like I enjoy seeing these people. I really need a day off, and I haven't had one at all, and I'm really excited about Wednesday.
You know, it's funny because the festive period to me is always like my favorite time of the year. But I remember on the 23rd, I was with my mum and we went to my friend Jamie's house, and we were in like a supermarket, and I was buying like a whiskey for someone and whatever. And the woman who was like working the self scan was like, "This is ridiculous. They were queued up the aisles this morning like it was the war." And I was like, "Okay." And I was like trying to be really nice to her because I knew it was like that season. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Excuse me, you didn't unclip my alcohol, could I?" And she was like, "Oh my god, another thing." I was like, you know, but I was trying. And but anyway, what I was going to say was, obviously for me, Christmas is always,
yeah,
just
working
like
retail in the Christmas season is also not super helpful. Like Monday and Tuesday were insane. And of course my boss is like, don't want to pay for people to work there. So they scheduled me to come in at 6 on Monday, which was insane because the store looked awful and we couldn't catch up on everything. Like it took until basically yesterday for the store to look fine again.
It's a weird time period, and I try to kind of remember. So anyways, but the point I was going to make was I saw that Carrie Fisher's daughter, who was in the latest Star Wars movie, she had posted a thing because I got a message from someone very close to me talking about, you know, because I realized like maybe like last week that like a lot of my friends don't have their mums anymore, and like I forget that sometimes, so like I imagine that Christmas is probably a fairly difficult part of that whole thing.
I walked into my aunt's room yesterday getting my coat, and like it's weird because it's been 25 years, and like it hit me because I saw like just a picture of our family with my mom, and then like the little, like she has some flowers from her funeral in a little like shadow box thing, and I have one too, and I almost started crying. Like it's a whole thing.
It's rough, and you know, the person I was speaking to has only been a couple of years into that group or whatever you would call it, and mm-hmm. and it's rough because nothing.
The
you
shittiest
say.
Club ever.
The shittiest club ever, and anyway, but you know, the trying to talk about that, but the Carrie Fisher's daughter had said in her Instagram post, she was like, this is a weird time of year, because obviously the worst thing for her is not only did her mum die at Christmas, but then her gran died like 2 days later. Basically,
it was like
from
the next day or 2 days, yeah.
Basically, from her mum dying, so it was like, I mean, she has like a double whammy of stuff, and she had posted this thing about it, and I want to try and find it because I thought it'd be a good thing to read out. But okay, Billy Catherine Lourd, and she read this thing on Instagram that I thought could be a cool thing to read out, if I can get it here. And she posted a photo of like her and her mum and her gran. And because I'm fine on Christmas, but I appreciate a lot of people aren't that way because they have stuff that they're actually dealing with. And what she had written, I thought was lovely. Oh, fuck off! I don't want to log into Instagram. Sorry, hold on.
but no, I mean it is a weird time because you're. I think it's the pressure of trying to be festive too is one of the hardest things. Like when you're not feeling festive about it, like I said, I love going to see my family, but it's like it's supposed to be this magical time, and they shove Christmas trees down your throat, and it's like everything's supposed to be happy, and like even on years that like because this year's been rougher than the past few for me for whatever reason, and then but I got through it. And I had a nice time and I made it to all the parties. Like I did cry through one of them, but like I made it to all of them. And then like you still feel kind of empty afterwards because you didn't feel festive and happy about it.
So here's what Billy had said about her mum and her gran. She said, happy holidays, but also sad, emotional, weird, stressful holidays. Sending my love to everyone who's lost someone they loved and is missing them a little extra today. I see you. It's okay if everything isn't always merry and bright. It can be a mix of all of it. It's all okay. Feel all the feelings, the good and the not so good. Eat something delicious they used to love. Put on one of their favourite songs. Tell a story about them. Cry about them. Call one of their friends you haven't talked in a while. Be kind and patient with yourself. Don't grieve in silence. You are not alone. So I thought that was a nice thing to say about people who have stuff going on the holidays. However, my mother, who I was driving down... So I was leaving my mother for the first time at Christmas, and God, would she let me know about it at every available opportunity, including we were watching The Crown, and there was like a moment where like Queen Elizabeth and Charles had a thing. She was like, oh, I know how Elizabeth feels this year, being abandoned. I'm like, all right, calm down. So we were driving down the week before Christmas to my other house because I was going down for Christmas. And I took a load of stuff down because I basically needed like two full suitcases between presents for me that I'd been given from people and presents for my other half and dog stuff. So I took like a full suitcase and a bag down the week before. And then I took a full suitcase and the dog on Christmas Eve. And when I went down on the 20th to hand stuff in, we were driving back. And like my mum and I actually said to her, I was like, do you realise, Mum, that like some people don't have their mums anymore and I'm in this weird place where I feel quite guilty about it because I have you? And she's like, what's that supposed to mean? And I was like, because you're too much. Like, you're like three mums in one. And then she like decided to start telling me about like the music she used to listen to when she went out like to clubs and stuff. And she played this woman called Hazel Dean, a song called Searching, Looking for Love in parentheses. And I thought we could play it at the end of this podcast because it is ridiculous. It's like sure. 80s big hair. And my mum was like, that'd be me in the club. I'd be seeing the boy. I'd be dancing to that. I was like, I do not need to know this information. I need to
know this information. I want to know all of the information about Fiona's past life.
Hazel Dean, Searching for Love. So we'll play that at the end. But anyway, but I went down there for Christmas to my other halves, and I got there. And Hulk had a Christmas sweater on. He had a Christmas sweater. He looked very adorable. Aww. People
loved
him.
How does he deal with costumes? Is he okay wearing a sweater? Because I know he doesn't like things on his head.
He doesn't like things on his head, but he's okay with something that's on his body. Because he knows he's going to get treats. So he kind of endures it. He looks at you like, fuck you. But he will take it. So he wore that. But then I had to go to Steve Gunn's sister's house. Like, as soon as I got off the train, so it was like Steve Gunn, his mum, me and Hulk, we drive to his sister's house with his sister, her boyfriend, and their two kids in a very small environment. where they've put out like a large buffet of food that I'm expected to eat a lot of. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, when you first meet people, you're not comfortable enough to be the pig that you want to be food wise. Like, you're just,
I mean,
not.
Like, I can't be the pig that I want to be food wise because my body will reject it. So it's,
but you know what
situation.
I mean. Like, you when you first meet people, you're like, oh, I'll have like one cheese roll, but like, I'm not going to have like seven, which is what I would have if I was comfortable. But they were lovely, and you know, they were loving Hulk. And then, yeah, it was a weird Christmas, but a fun Christmas to be being the guest at another family's Christmas. You must know this from going to like Alaric, as like the, or Mr. Sondra. Oh my god, I call him his real name, Mr.
Wow.
Sondra. but like going to somebody else's Christmas is almost in some ways more comfortable because you don't have the pressure of being part of the family. So if like family politics come into play, you don't have to really deal with it, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it can be nice that way. The nice thing about Mr. Saunders' family is that they are, like, very low-key, and, like, I fit in like, way better with them than I do with my own family in a lot of ways, because they're just kind of like, we don't give a fuck, which is always lovely. No, the weirdest one was when I was 11, and... I would have been 11, like, just turned 11 at that point, and I met my stepmom's whole family, which was crazy, because she's one of seven kids. So, like, my dad and my stepmom had just started dating, like, 2 months earlier, and we all, like, we got taken to Poole Family Christmas for the first time. And now, like, I love that family. I love them dearly. They're awesome. Like, they've been part of my life for so long, like, 24 years, whatever. But, like, having all of these people, like, so excited that their sister's dating someone and that there are kids involved and all this stuff, and they're like, oh, it's getting serious if they're coming to Christmas. And I was like, fuck this. Like, I don't want to be here. So I read a book in the corner. But yeah, like, it's strange being part of somebody else's Christmas, I think. Like, because I've been to Mr. Sondra's, like, extended family's Christmas a few, or Thanksgiving. We used to do Thanksgiving. And, like, especially when we were dating and we weren't married yet and stuff, it was always kind of like, it was strange to just kind of be part of it, but nice. And they treat you like a guest, which is kind of cool. They're like, we want to make sure that you're comfortable.
Well, because I feel like when you're part of like some, when you're part of a family politics situation, you have to be involved. Like, you have your role, whether it's you're the antagonist, the protagonist, whatever. Whereas when you're the guest, you can kind of get away with just not saying anything. And that's the part that I like. Not that look, if you've met Steve Gunn, my other half, he is so laid back, he's horizontal, to a point where it annoys me. Like,
it bothers you that he doesn't, like, get more riled up. Because you get riled up so easily.
Well, offensive. Viscerally annoys me that he is so laid back. And, yeah, but, like, so there's no politics there. But I just like the idea that, like, whatever happens, I don't need to get involved. But there was one drama.
Because it's not your battle.
So there was one, very quickly, there was one drama I feel I should fill you in on. All I was looking forward to in Christmas, apart from the massive amounts of presents, which was lovely, was Gavin and Stacey, the Christmas special. I didn't think this day was going to come. It was 8:30. All I wanted on Christmas Day was the Gavin and Stacey Christmas special. And Steve Gunn's mum had prepared a quiz because she'd prepared one before. She's a teacher at a school, and she'd prepared a stupid fucking quiz before that I took umbrage to because it was stupid. So she then prepared another one because she pretty much wanted to see my reaction to some of the stupid fucking questions. So, like,
why are you doing a quiz?
Because people want me to be annoyed. So, but it's like a quiz for like people who like were an adult in 1977. And I was not, contrary to belief. So, like, I was like, I don't know who died on Christmas Day in 1977. I don't care. So, there was a whole quiz. It was very annoying. We started it at 10 past 8. Gavin and Stacey was due to start at half 8. And then I was told, right, at 8:32 p.m, because I'm a bit of a stickler for, like, starting things at the beginning, and I don't want to join something in progress. So, like, I was told that Gavin and Stacey was set to record and not to worry. That's what I was told. And I didn't believe that. Because I hadn't set it to record. So if I haven't set it to record, I don't know if it really is happening. So 8:33, I say, are we sure it's recording? Now, Sandra, do you think it was recording or not?
I'm going to go with it was not recording.
It was not recording! So I was very frustrated. But I can't show that frustration because I'm in another family Christmas.
Right.
So I then click record, but we've lost the first couple of minutes. And I don't know what happens in the first couple of minutes. And I want to see the full fucking thing. So I am very like, people might not understand how hard it is for me to not show how I feel facially. It's very hard.
You can't not show how you feel facially. Like, you are incapable of it.
So imagine me really trying at that point. Mm-hmm. And then Steve Gunn then is getting annoyed because he understands how much this means to me to watch it. And we're not watching it because of this fucking quiz.
Uh-huh.
So then Steve Gunn's brother's trying to play it, but he's playing it from where it is live. And by this point, it's 9 o'clock and it's halfway through. And I'm like,
oh, you can't start halfway through.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have an aneurysm. So we're watching it on Sky, which, you know, is you're supposed to be able to sort of DVR, whatever. And it's not working. And then I'm like, can we just, like, watch it later then? So we don't have to watch, like, bits of it. And mm-hmm. eventually, I remembered that BBC iPlayer, you can start a program from the beginning. But you can't do that on the Sky version of the BBC iPlayer. It has to be the actual BBC iPlayer. And finally, at 9:05, it was put on, and somebody turned around to me. Bearing in mind, I can't react how I want to react. I have to be nice.
Uh-huh.
And somebody went, see? That wasn't so hard.
That's not the thing to say to you at that moment.
It was the hardest thing I've ever had in my life to not react to that. But luckily, the thing that got me through it was Steve Gunn basically reacted on my behalf, and I appreciated him for all that he did in that moment.
Because it's his family, so he's allowed to, like, look.
But also, he knew how much I was holding it in.
Of course.
To, like, not react. And then, but then I watched the Gavin and Stacey Christmas special, and it was amazing. So, all is good with the world.
It was so good! Like, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but it was so
Did you hear, I know you're not a ratings, but did you hear the ratings for it?
I didn't, no.
So, like, so the
oh,
last...
wait, I think I heard you talk about it with Finn. Wasn't it, like, 12 million people or something?
Yeah, so the last episode of Gavin and Stacey in 2010 had 10.3 million, and this episode had 12.3. Which
And well-deserved. It was perfect. It was amazing.
It was so
I loved it. I loved it so much. And I want more of it, because we need more of it, because you can't just end it like that and not give us more of it.
Give us more. So then today I'm like, okay, I'm going to be podcasting with Sandra. We need to figure out some stuff to talk about. And I wake up to see that Lars Sullivan has done a gay porno.
Yes, he has. You know what? Young Lars Sullivan with hair was kind of cute.
I feel like you're just comparing him to current Lars Sullivan. Like,
I mean, maybe.
He still looks like Bigfoot's son.
Yeah, but I think he's kind of an attractive Bigfoot son. I don't know.
There's a great moment, and, like, so I have no desire to seek this out, but there's, like, a moment where, like, him and this other guy are, like, on their knees on a bed, like, fully clothed, and then, like, whoever's off camera is going, like, hey, Adam, or whatever his name is in the thing, like,
Mitch.
Hey, Mitch, you've never had your dick sucked by a guy before, right? And he's like, no. And they're like, how do you feel about it? Well, I'm having a pretty good time so far. Let's see how it goes. It made my skin crawl. It was so bad.
It's
every bad porno I've ever seen.
Exactly the type of porn content that I crave. Like, because, like, I've told you this before. I don't watch a lot of porn because I get bored. Like, I just can't be bothered to watch porn, right? Like, it, whatever. Like, if you see people fuck, you've seen people fuck. It's fine. But what I live for are the interstitial stories in a porno. Like, where someone arrives and has to make awkward conversation before they get to fucking. That's my favorite part of porn. That's why my favorite porno is Pirates XXX, because it has, like, such a good story and special effects and skeletons, right?
Special effects and skeletons?
Yes, I've told you about this before.
I've not watched it.
It's the best porn ever made. You need to watch it.
Anyway, continue.
It's, like, necessary. Necessary pornographic viewing. But, like, I don't know. Lars Sullivan just sitting there going, yeah, well, it's true. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm having such a great time. So funny to me. So funny to me. And the fact that he was in a gay porno, like, you know what? I don't give a fuck what he did. I don't care. Like, people were like, oh my gosh, this just proves he's a terrible person, just like we thought he was. No, this does not prove he was a terrible person. I don't give a shit if he did porn. The person who tweeted out the video that you're talking about, Klondike Bill on Twitter, I think had the best tweet about the situation that I've seen, where he said, "It doesn't matter if Lars is homosexual or bisexual or whatever, or what he chose to do to make ends meet, more power to him. What does matter is the horrible things he said about the LGBTQ community, not to mention minorities, etc. The chins or cocks have come home to roost." And strong agree, Klondike Bill. Strong agree.
I mean, the thing, like, so I was not, like, people were like, oh my god, like, he did this gay porno, and he, like, was slagging off gay people. It's like, I was the least surprised of any surprise I've ever had, because when I was in high school, like, when you're in high school, the person who, like, slags off gay people is the person who wants to experiment. That is the person.
Oh, 100%.
For the majority. Now, not always, because, but most of the time, that's what it is. So, like, the idea that he did gay porn, my message would just be to anyone out there who is in any way curious about being gay, but, like, doesn't feel comfortable about it and feels more at home making fun of gay people, here would be my advice to you. If you are going to become a professional wrestler and you're going to tweet homophobic things on Twitter, maybe don't do a gay porn film, you stupid fucking shit. Like, it's how did he not think that somebody was going to find this? If I had done a gay porno, I would think on the daily basis that somebody would find it. I'd be like, well, somebody's gonna see it. And I'm not even, like, derogatory about gay people, because I am one. But, like, oh my god, Lars Sullivan, what a fucking idiot in every single circumstance here. Like, he does a gay porn, well, badly. Then he, like, is homophobic on Twitter. Then he becomes
love that Effie's boyfriend's response to the gay porn was, this is a boring-ass gay porn film.
I mean, I saw the intro, and I could see from there. But, like, it's just, like, he's such an idiot. He's so stupid. Like, how could you not? I don't get it. I do not get it.
I mean, people do dumb shit. Like, I don't know. I haven't been bothered to, like, look up the timeline of when Lars Sullivan did the gay porno versus when Lars Sullivan was making the terrible comments on that bodybuilding site. Because I can't be bothered putting that much effort into Lars Sullivan, right? Like, I just can't. I think he was mildly entertaining as a professional wrestler. He's been out for a long time. I had totally forgotten that he existed before this came into the news cycle. And, like, I just... I can't be bothered to, like, put that much effort into it. But yeah, like, if you've done a gay porn film, maybe don't make all of this, like, super homophobic comments that you've done. Like, someone's going to find it. And, but, like, again, I'm not disparaging him for doing porn for doing gay porn. Like, I don't give a shit.
But you
do all the porn you want.
You literally let a man suck your dick, which is, we've all been there, right? But, like, you can't slag off gay people. You can't, you have like, retired your right to do that. And the idea that he didn't think it was going to come out, like, how stupid is he?
Of course it's going to come out. I mean, people dig through people's histories. That's how they found all of the comments on the bodybuilding site from him, right? Like, people apparently have a lot of time on their hands to dig into the past lives of mildly famous professional wrestlers. I don't know. Like, I mean, he was fined, obviously, for the comments and stuff that he made, and I still am a little on the fence about it, honestly. Like, finding someone for something they did, like, decade ago, I don't know. The whole thing is just such a dumpster fire. Lars Sullivan is basically a dumpster fire at this point. And
do you think that from this coming out compared to where he was before, because obviously we know he had mental health issues with it, you know, with earlier this year, and he didn't come back, and there was all the stories about his homophobia in the past and stuff.
And then he came back and beat up some Mexicans and then got injured and left again.
Then he got injured, and then there's this.
Which was not, like, optically, WWE, that is one of the most tone-deaf things they've done recently, is having Lars Sullivan beat up Lucha House Party after all of the comments that he made surfaced.
It's a thing. Do you think that Lars Sullivan, I'm not saying this in, like, a weird, I'm not trying to be, like, hyperbolic, but do you think there is a way back for him now, or do you think this is just, like, another nail in the coffin for him? Like, how does this in any way affect his future WWE storylines, do you think?
I don't think it does, honestly, because I feel like the news cycle is so short right now. Like, this is obviously just broke today, so everyone's talking about it, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Lars Sullivan did this. But I mean, the fact that you and I just said, oh, I totally forgot about Lars Sullivan, I totally forgot about him existing, And if I had seen Lars Sullivan in the news for like anything, really, I know that people that I follow on Twitter would be like, he's homophobic and racist from his past comments. But a lot of people just have kind of forgotten that by now. And I feel like I don't know how far along in his injury recovery process Lars Sullivan is. Again, I can't be bothered to put that much effort into thinking about Lars Sullivan. But however far along he is in his recovery process, if he's still like 3 months out or something like that, if he's still gone for a few months, I think if he comes back at some point, like after WrestleMania, I don't think anybody's going to care. Like, I'm sure people will bring it up. Hey, remember that time he did a gay porn? Hey, remember that time he said really super homophobic and racist things? I mean, people aren't still talking about Xavier Woods being in Paige's like leaked videos and stuff. And that was a thing that was really detrimental to her health.
Remember when they changed the belt? Remember when they
They didn't change the belt just because of that. I thought they changed the belt before that.
Did they not change it around that time?
It was near that time, I think it was because of that.
I feel like a jizz stained belt is partly a reason to rebrand a belt.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd totally forgotten about that aspect of it.
If you had jizzed on a belt, I would change it.
Yeah. Okay, but honestly, let's think about this logically. Most of those belts have been jizzed on. Like, I'm sure of it.
Now, can I watch that TV series? Sondra uncovers which belts have been jizzed on and by who? Like, that's
If you were the champion in a major wrestling promotion, you'd want to have sex with the belt on at least once, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously. Like, do you think that Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins have not had, like, sexy time with their titles?
To be fair, Seth Rollins is so boring, I don't think he has. I think he'd be like, don't do it on the belts.
But I think Becky would suggest it.
Becky would suggest it, but he'd be like, don't do it on the belts. The belts mean too much.
Oh gosh, he is that person.
Okay, so I thought before we do, we've got some listener questions, and we'll do more of them in the overrun, but I thought before we do listener questions, we could do just kind of some quickfire news and thoughts about stuff that's going on.
Sure.
We had Andrade become the new WWE United States champion on Boxing Day, December 26th. By beating Rey Mysterio in Madison Square Garden. What do you think about Andrade winning the title, winning it at the Garden? Like, you know, how do you feel about, like, belts changing hands at the house show and with the belt going on Andrade from Rey? Talk me through your thoughts about it.
I love it. I think it's great. Like, I haven't been watching tons of WWE, so I don't know. Is there, like, a story that's led up to this at all?
No.
Or is it just, like, they had a match? Okay. That's fine. So I really like Andrade. I think he's great. And I think that he could do super well with the belt. I really liked him as NXT champion. I think he and Zelina Vega are a great act together. I hope that they've stopped teasing dissension with those two, because why in the ever loving fuck would you split them up? It makes no sense. But yeah, I think it's good. And I liked when Rey Mysterio won the championship. I think that was a really big, exciting moment. And I think Rey Mysterio can be a good U.S. champion. But Rey Mysterio is also, he's an established veteran. He doesn't need to be champion right now. I think that Andrade being champion, if they decide to do anything with it, which who knows, it's WWE. Sometimes you're just a champion and it doesn't matter. But if they decide to do something with Andrade as U.S. champion, I think that he could do great things with it. I like the idea of switching titles at house shows. I think it makes it feel more realistic. It's the same conversation we've had about switching the NXT title at house shows, right? Because we're in the middle of kind of a taped television cycle with Raw and SmackDown. So if they would have changed the title on Raw or SmackDown, spoilers would have gotten out because they were pre-taped. So I think doing it at Madison Square Garden on that show, it makes it a little more spontaneous. It makes it a little more exciting. And it makes it seem like if you go to a live event, something might actually happen. Like, especially if you go to one of the big live events, let's be honest, like SmackDown Live in Grand Rapids, Michigan is probably not going to have a title change. Unless someone gets busted for drugs or something. So, you know, but I think it's cool and I think it's exciting and I'm happy for Andrade. I think he is phenomenal and I hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, doing title changes on house shows is always a fun thing to do because it gives you the idea that anything can happen. The US title does mean zilch, sadly, and it has for years and years and years. I mean, it's really the last time the US title meant something significant was John Cena when he did the US Open
Challenge.
Is that,
2015?
2015, yeah. Okay, I was actually listening to Grado talk about, because we're not going to cover this on this, but Grado brought up the idea that John Cena is maybe like the wrestler of the decade. And I don't think he means like in the ring, because obviously, like, you know, we could probably name 50 above Cena in ring, but like just overall wrestler of the decade. And when you think about Cena, I think the first half of the decade, he's a shout. Like the Punk stuff, the Rock stuff, the United States Open Challenge, like he did a lot of good stuff. And the US...
I think there's an argument to be made for it, for sure.
Yeah, it's not an argument I would make, but it's an argument to be made. And I think the US title, when he had it, really meant a lot. And, you know, he to really give him credit, he had the idea, you know, let me take this mid-card belt that hasn't meant anything for years and years and years, and let me make it mean something, and he did. And it's not really meant much since then, so I'm glad Andrade got the belt, and I think Andrade and Rey could be a good program, but... I think overall it's probably just going to be more of the same for the US title, but I'm glad for Andrade that he's got the title and hopefully it will lead somewhere. I wanted to ask you as well, I know we talked last week about how we were sort of in different opinions. You liked the Dark Order closing segment to AEW on December 18th. I did not. I wanted to ask you...
I was listening to Power Slam and Mr. Sandra was around because we live together and he just...
Because we
like...
live together.
Yes, we do. I live with my husband, it's true. And we don't have a very large place, so he often hears what I'm listening to or sees what I'm watching. And it just cracked me up. His reactions to you and Finn reacting to the Dark Order. He goes, are they going on about the Dark Order again? And I was like, I don't like it. And I was like, I love it. I think it's fun. I seem to be very in the minority of that opinion. That's fine. I don't care. I think it's fun. I joined the Dark Order. I went to the website. Nothing happened. But I was hoping I'd at least get like a fun screen that was like, your soul is mine now. But it was just like, okay, you joined the Dark Order.
But the question I was going to ask you is nothing to do with whether I enjoyed it or you enjoyed it or any of that. It's a different part of it. So Jim Ross on his podcast, Grill and JR, had responded to what went on. I want to read you quickly what he said, because it's kind of taken a little bit of a whirl of its own about whether he should have been able to say this or not. So here's what Jim Ross said when he was asked about the Dark Order segment by Conrad Thompson. He said, so I think that everything people saw can be fixed. I'm as excited about this brand as I've ever been. I know we're going to be just fine. I just truly believe it's not me just bullshitting. I'm 67 years old with a 3-year contract. You do the math. I'm on the back nine. Oh no, that's just, wait a minute, that's not. He basically called it the shits. He said, I thought it was the shits. But I think that we can come back from it, and I think that there's ways to come back from it. So the question that people were kind of pondering back and forth, I wanted to ask you about was, do you think that Jim Ross, if he is a commentator on the show, should have to sort of toe the company line on any angle whatsoever? Or do you think that people would have more respect for him? Because he basically said it was the shits, but kind of did it as like a shit sandwich, where he was kind and then said he didn't like it and then was kind again, saying all of it is recoverable. Do you think that an announcer should say what they think on their own platform, or do you think that they should have to go with what the company's doing? How do you feel about it?
I mean, I feel like anybody should be allowed to say what they want to say. I don't know if it's very smart to call something the shits when it's for a company that you work for, but I think people are going to respect JR a little bit more for having his own opinion and like making that known. I mean, he's cranky old man JR at this point, right? Like that is his role. And if there's something that he doesn't like, then, you know, like he's kind of known for calling out things that he doesn't like because he's cranky old man JR. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's like super smart in terms of promoting your company? No. Do I think it's good that he said all of this is recoverable? Like it bothers me in some respect, because if they're trying to get the Dark Order over as a big thing, like having one of the announcers, the lead announcer for your show, saying that this is shitty and this is stupid,
can I just
and whatnot,
give you
and it's not part of a like...
Let me read the exact comment, just so in case people haven't...
Yeah, because it's hard to respond to something I haven't heard.
So here's what he said. He said, it's as if we've created this amazing sin that can never be duplicated. Since the 1970s, how many matches do you think I've called that were the absolute drizzling shits? Every brand with some big names, you ain't got to be an unknown under a mask to shit the bed. I knew that the crowd did not go crazy on how we went off the air because I was in the arena. It was poorly executed, folks, and hopefully nothing like that will ever occur again. And I know everybody that has some ability to change things in AEW are well aware of it.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a fine thing to say. He didn't call the Dark Order shits. He didn't call the performers shit. He just said, like, it was poorly executed. It was a poorly executed segment, which I kind of like. I like the idea of the Dark Order coming and attacking everyone. I still do. Like, I'm sorry, I just do. And I have a point to bring up about that in a second. But I don't know. If he didn't like the way it was executed, I think that's fine to call out. I don't think he should be like dragged over the rails for having an opinion.
No, I mean, I responded to somebody on Facebook who'd asked about it, and I was kind of saying, like, for me, like, I feel like people respect announcers more when they kind of say what they think, because like you
It
say,
makes them feel more like people and less like automatons.
yeah, because it's not like he's saying fire the Dark Order, right? Like,
No.
he's not saying that. He's just saying it was the shits, and it should, you know, hopefully we'll be able to move on. And even what I said when I was talking about it, I like the Dark Order more. I just think we went from like week two to week 153 of the story and didn't give people enough time or get them over enough to where they were the point where they would be realistic enough to do what they did. And that's not saying that they should be fired or that they are not. I mean, the punches thing, I'm like conflicted about the punches thing, because I feel like you can find anything in any company to use for your narrative that you want to use. Do you know what I mean? You could find
Oh
something in
yeah, like I
WWE.
mean, if you are actively looking for like missed moves in any company and on any show, you'll find it. Like it
But I mean,
happens.
I do think that the guy who was doing those punches, I mean, that really needs to be worked on, because if you're on like national TV, you should not be doing that. And anyone who
Well, they're
makes,
probably using local talent though. Like I think that's one of the genius things about the Creepers is that you can just use different local talent every week. You don't have to have the same people
it's
doing
genius
it.
until you have someone who's that off the mark. Because like I feel quite bad for Dustin Rhodes, because like Dustin Rhodes is someone who's so underrated as a talent. He's been around for so long, and like he probably didn't know that it was that far off. And then he, like, I think he tweeted about it saying he was really disappointed or whatever. And I think that, like, maybe if you had half the creepers that you do and had it be like a bunch of people who you knew were like workers and were like of a certain level, that would be better. But for me, like, when Gene Okerlund used to be around, Gene Okerlund, you could see when Gene Okerlund would do interviews before, when he was either like bored or like he would laugh at something. And he just kind of became this respected voice because you kind of knew he'd always be him, no matter what he thought. Sometimes you might like it, sometimes you might not. And I like that JR is doing that on his podcast. And I don't think that, I mean, I doubt that AEW are going to, like, you know, fire him because he said what he thought about something. I do think that, you know, the young, I said this on the Powerslam podcast with Finn, but I'll say it again here. The Young Bucks quit on Twitter. I think it's a bad week to quit. Because you're like EVPs who are being paid seven figures to do this job, and for you to quit because you don't like people giving you feedback on something, I think is
Did they
fairly.
quit because they don't like feedback, or did they quit because they were tired of Twitter?
Well, they
I
quit
don't
because
know. Like I
they quit
haven't
because they
seen
were
any
tired
of
of
the
Twitter, but
story.
the week that they did it seemed to be, whether they did or they didn't, it looks like they quit because of that. Whether they did or they didn't, it felt like if you're going to remove yourself from Twitter, do it, that's fine, but to kind of announce that you're going to do it that week just looked
Because
like,
I kind of feel like it makes sense to quit Twitter this week because it's the holiday season and they want to spend time with their families and all that kind of stuff. Like it coincided with this, which is unfortunate. And again, like I don't know. I didn't see like a public Twitter declaration of I'm quitting Twitter. I haven't been on Twitter that much lately, you
I
guys.
think
Like I can't handle it.
Matt Jackson had posted something on Instagram kind of saying, you know, like, we don't want to, and then their dad had said, like, they don't want to be around the negative energy. And that's totally fine. But when you're like EVPs and you are in charge of a company where you're putting out product to people, you kind of have to feel like you're out there and you're in the, you don't even need to read it. Like, don't read it, but just be out there and look like you're out there.
I mean, I feel like making a public declaration is probably a little bit overkill. I think that probably didn't help the situation. Like, just stay away from it. Just be like, I'm taking a break for the holidays, y'all. Peace out.
Exactly, yeah. So, but yeah, I think that JR just kind of being out there and being him, whether you like what he's saying or not, is something that people should get behind. Like, I would much rather hear people say what they want to say. Like, Sandra, when we were talking about, like, you know, you like the Dark Order stuff, I didn't. Like, that's good. It's good that we both have felt different ways about something, because then we're not just like feeling the same about everything.
No, I agree. And I have a question for you about
Sure.
the Dark Order, since everyone wants me to like compare things of the decade and all this stuff. And like, honestly, you guys, like my mental health has been in the trash for the last week. I can barely remember what happened yesterday, much less the entire decade. But something occurred to me when I was listening to you and Finn talk about the Dark Order and not be very happy with it, which is fine. You don't have to like it. Now, I wasn't watching wrestling when this happened, so I don't know how the impact of it was. Like, do you think that with the Dark Order, they're trying to go for something similar to the Nexus in 2010? And like, how did those segments compare? Like, when the Nexus came and attacked John Cena and CM Punk, right? It was them in the ring and Justin Roberts with a tie,
Yes,
but
yes,
like,
yes, yes.
it was John Cena and CM Punk. So, like, two of the company's top stars at that point were in the ring, and these rookie guys from nowhere, from a show that no one watched, came and like ripped up the ring and beat them up and attacked Justin Roberts and like basically dismantled the entire set. That seems kind of similar to what the Dark Order are trying to do. And I'm just curious, because you were watching it at the time and I've obviously only seen it in highlights. Did people respond similarly to Nexus as they're responding to Dark Order now, or was it better received?
Well, I actually, it's a good thing to bring up, because I remember the day or the Tuesday morning after that happened, and my friend Kez had messaged me, and he was like, "Oh my God, you need to watch the end of Raw. It's amazing." And I had this like built-up thing of what was going to happen, and I watched a little bit of NXT season one. We are wild and young. That was the theme tune.
It's a great
It's
tune.
a great tune. So I had watched bits and pieces of it, and I kind of was familiar enough with who people were on the show, but I wasn't like religiously watching every second of it. And he had said to me, "This big thing happens." So I was obviously like fully. I thought The Rock was coming back. I think it was in Miami or something. I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be huge!" And then the Nexus guys came out and did what they did. I think that the reason, I mean, from what I remember, people were open to the idea. I think that the Nexus guys were competent enough as pro wrestlers that they could have sort of done the job, but I
Not
think
all of them
not all of them.
at
But
that point. Are you still like Skip Sheffield and Darren Young?
in terms of what they did, like when it was presented on the TV, like what they did on those TV shows was presented enough. But I think it became very apparent quite quickly that like Barrett was ready, like Barrett could go, and maybe like Heath Slater was
Brian,
there, and
but then he got fired.
Brian obviously before he got fired. But the problem that you had is that once you got to SummerSlam and it was this 7-on-7 match, and you had like Cena and Edge and Jericho and all this kind of stuff against these other guys that really Barrett and Brian, I mean, by that point, Brian was in the opposite team because he'd been fired and rehired. That like the whole Nexus, you couldn't really do what you tried to do. And I think it also took, I think they also thought that more people were watching NXT the show than were. And they maybe felt like most people were going to get behind, like Justin Gabriel and Darren Young and Michael Tarver and all these people. And I don't think that many
Because
people.
by the time I started watching, Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater had been tag team champions three times. And I have no idea what those matches were or how they got the tag team champions three times, because this would have been like early 2011. So sometime in a very short span of time, they got the tag team championships like three times in a row.
Yeah, and I think part of it, like this is why I think I feel bad for Barrett in some ways, because Barrett was fairly ready. Terrible haircut, but fairly ready. And I think he was kind of let down by the idea that most of the other guys weren't ready for like they could have come in and been mid-card guys, but like you were putting them in the main event. I guess Edge and Jericho and Cena and all these people, and they weren't able to hold up their end of the bargain. So I think that maybe the only thing that the Nexus guys had going for them was that they had just been on a TV show where all their faces were on there for a couple of weeks. But I think it's a decent comparison to bring up of like the undercard guys in the Nexus. I mean, I don't know who's under masks in the
Michael
Dark Order.
Tarver? Like, Michael Tarver was never going to be that great.
That's what I mean. So I don't know who's under the mask of the Dark Order, so it's hard for me to like compare each person to like whoever, but I think it is a fair comparison for the lower card Nexus guys and the Dark Order guys to be in a similar conversation. Really, the only guys I would put out of that are Wade Barrett and Daniel Bryan, and everybody else was kind of. So yeah, I think it's a fair point to bring up that, and I don't think people
I
at the
think with the
time.
Dark Order, like, I mean, everyone's focusing on the creepers, which is weird to me because, like, I'm focusing on, the Super Smash Brothers or, like, the main guys in the Dark Order, right? Like, Evil Uno, I love him. So it's, I don't know, like, we've seen Dark Order have some really good matches too. Like, I've actually enjoyed the Dark Order tag matches quite a bit, and I think that's why the end segment didn't bother me, because, like, I don't really care who's under the creeper mask, because I figure they're probably interchangeable anyway. Like, it's probably just different people doing it every week because you have people available.
From what I saw, a lot of people were kind of saying, like, the idea, if they had come in and beat up the Young Bucks, for example, that'd have been, because, you know, they beat up the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks just had this big match, and that'd be fine. It was the idea they beat up everybody in one go, mm-hmm. like all the top guys. I think that was more the idea of the frustration from people. And for me, like, I was more on board with the Dark Order, but that segment really turned me off them. But I think there's a way to save it for everybody. I think there's a way to save it for people like me and Finn, who were like, kill it with fire, and people like you who were into it. Like, there's a way to save it where the Dark Order can still be part of the show and, like, gradually build them up again, whereas you don't have to put them in the main event thing. Like, if they're listening to fans all across the board, then have them be on the show, have them, sort of follow up from what they did on that show, but not be, because I think it is fair to say that a lot of people were not a fan of that angle in the arena mm-hmm. and on TV, but that doesn't mean you have to, like, just kill them. I mean, I know Fed had said, put them in a dumpster and send them to OVW. I'm not saying that's what you need to do with them, but, like, I think there's a way to salvage it for everybody if they're smart.
I think there is, and I just kind of feel like maybe if this didn't hit, because they seem to basically do the same thing here as they tried to do at Double or Nothing, and I don't know, like, I think it worked better here for me than it did at Double or Nothing, because we had a little bit of history of the Dark Order. I think that we had, like, a little bit to cling to, plus they had recruited Alex Shelley and John Silver, so it was like, hey, they've recruited some people, and they're people that I like who are really, really good. So, and that's part of, I think that might be part of why AEW is having trouble connecting to a mainstream television audience, though, is because those guys who are running that company, like Cody excluded, but the rest of those guys, especially the Young Bucks, are more used to catering to an independent crowd. And, like, for someone like me who follows a lot of independent wrestling Twitter and shows and that kind of stuff, like, oh, these are people I know, these are people I've seen, this is great. And that doesn't always translate to television. So I think they have a really tough job to do. So I think, like, dragging them over the coals for this seems a bit harsh to me. But I don't know. And like, I'm not super, like, 100% invested in AEW or WWE right now. Like, that's just not where my heart lies in terms of wrestling fandom. So I'm not trying to, like, give AEW a pass or anything. It's just, I don't know. I kind of liked it. And seemed similar to something like the Nexus, or just because it was, like, guys who are unknown to a mainstream television audience taking over in the main event. It was, like, the closest comparison that I could draw.
No, Nexus is a good example to draw. The other thing I wanted to ask before we move on to listener questions is, obviously, we found out on SmackDown, on a painful episode of SmackDown, that Daniel Bryan will be the man facing off against Bray Wyatt at the Royal Rumble, The Fiend, 6 years after they faced off in their first Royal Rumble match. Bray Wyatt did an interview recently where he had talked
about... So is he facing The Fiend or is he facing Bray Wyatt?
The Fiend.
Okay,
he's facing The Fiend. He had talked about his 2014 match with Daniel Bryan. He put a statement out on his Instagram where Wyatt said, "In 2014, I had one of my favorite bouts of my career against Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. Bryan was red hot. It was his time. He went on to main event WrestleMania and become the champ. Deservedly so. Bryan is without a doubt the best I've ever been in the ring with. Fast forward to 2020, The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. Bryan is like myself in the fact that no one said, this is a guy we should build our company's future around. The first time we walked in the door, we had to scratch and claw, outwork, outtalk, outperform everyone in the pedestal in front of us. Daniel Bryan is one of the greatest of all time, but this is not his time. It's mine. This is when my name becomes synonymous with the industry I've given my life to. I want to thank you, Bryan, for the blood you've spilled, for the blood we've spilled together over the years. But understand, for me, this is my war worth dying for. The choice isn't mine to make. Good luck."
I'm here for it, man. I'm so here for it. I am excited. I loved Daniel Bryan versus The Fiend before. Like, we talked about this. Yeah, like, I'm really excited. And Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt at the Royal Rumble is one of my favorite WWE matches that I've ever seen. It's one that I actually do go back and rewatch from time to time, which is kind of rare nowadays that I would go back and rewatch some stuff. And I don't know. I think the story is really good. I think the shared history between them is really good. I think Bray Wyatt building it up like this, saying this is not Daniel Bryan's time, it's mine. I kind of agree, even though I love Daniel Bryan and he's like my fave. But yeah, I don't know. I think this is great and I'm kind of loving the build to it. And it's something that I'm like properly looking forward to in WWE, which is exciting.
So we are going to go from that to some listener questions. We're going to take more of the listener questions on the overrun, which is where we overrun on topics. Do you get what I did there, Sandra? Maybe pun on the...
I see what you did there. You're okay. Very clever.
Thank you. So, okay, we'll do a couple here and then we will do the majority of them because we have like 22 of them. Jason Dawson, who's had the most disappointing year and who's had the most surprisingly successful? So is there anyone this year, Sandra, that you were hoping for more from and it just didn't quite pan out the way you thought? Or anyone that you weren't expecting a big successful year from and had it?
It's hard for me to choose someone who's had a disappointing year because, like...
Can I give you a successful one?
Maybe Kenny Omega?
That's a good pick. Can I give you a successful one that no one will think I'm going to pick? Kofi Kingston has had a surprisingly successful year with his win at WrestleMania 35. I don't think he should be on any top 10 list of wrestler of the year. I've said this, but like, I think in terms of surprisingly successful, he won the title when I don't think MD thought he was going to in January the 1st, and he's the first proper black WWE champion. So I think that is surprisingly successful for me in a good way.
Yeah, no, I think Kofi Kingston's a good shout there. Another person that's had a fairly successful year that I might not have thought of, and like it's kind of petered out toward the end of the year, but I would say R-Truth. Like, I feel like R-Truth being so involved in the 24/7 title stuff was really, really fun for most of the year. And Drake Maverick too. Like, it's kind of hard to separate them because R-Truth and Drake Maverick were so synonymous with one another, like chasing each other for the title and stuff. And I know that like toward the end of the year, we've kind of forgotten about it, but I think for at least like a good portion of the year, that was super, super fun.
It's a fair point. Then we have Andrew. Oh god, this is for me. Andrew Fitzpatrick.
My other shout is Boomer Hatfield because Boomer Hatfield has been awesome in Chikara and part of one of my favorite stories, and Ophidian too. But like, I always know Ophidian's going to be successful because he's great.
Is there any? Are they doing a free trial just now for Chikara in case people want to get involved?
Yeah, you can actually check out. Chikara is on independentwrestling.tv and you can use, like, there are so many free trial codes, but if you sign up with the code Chikara, then I think they get a little bit of a kickback to it. You can also use the code Beyond and check out Uncharted Territory, that kind of stuff. But yes, and it's independentwrestling.tv and you can see, and there's like a 20-day free trial, so it's not just a week. You can try it for 20 days and it's exciting.
Anthony Fitzpatrick wants to know, question for Kenny, apart from everything from the Taker tour, has 2019 been enjoyable for you from an ITR perspective? It's a really difficult question to ask. No, is the answer, probably. Like, I feel like everything up until this year, even like the Edge cancellations or reschedulings and all that kind of stuff, like, I always felt like stuff was going to work out the way it needed to work out, and the Undertaker thing was the first time it didn't work out anywhere near. Like, the Undertaker thing, I didn't make any money on that tour whatsoever. Like, I put 6 months of work into it for no return whatsoever, so that's really rough to put that amount of time into something and have really no financial compensation for it. It was soul destroying. It was the only point in my life I've ever felt suicidal. It was really rough, and now I kind of question myself on a daily basis about the future and what I'm going to do and how things are going to be, but I don't want any sympathy for that, but that's just how I feel about it. But I'm consistently trying to think of ideas and ways that I can fight and try and make sure that I'm going to keep this going and keep the tours going and the podcast and all that kind of stuff. So no, it has not been enjoyable, but I have done as much as I can to try and get through it. So I'm hoping that 2020 is going to be a less stressful year. That's my answer. Jamie Dominic,
2019's been a whole thing.
It's been a whole thing. It's been a lot. But you know, look, I got the dream job in 2015, and I had like 3 years where it was just a dream job, and then like the fourth year I got a bit of a hurdle. So it's not like a poor me thing. It's just, it is what it is. You can't, like, you're gonna get stumbling blocks.
And you've still done some like some awesome stuff this year. Like, you've still pulled off quite a bit, and it's like, I know that it's hard for you to sometimes like see that it's been good, but there have definitely been accomplishments this year.
There have, you know, we did the Dustin Rhodes tour in the UK. We did the Bret Hart tour in the UK.
You've done shows at StarCast?
Shows at StarCast twice in Vegas and Baltimore. We've done Mick Foley shows. We've done a lot this year. So it's not that we've got stuff coming up next year, but it's just it's hard. It's hard for me to sort of take that stuff positively because I am. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever be the same after the Taker tour, realistically. I think I'll always be like looking around my shoulder in case someone's coming to like throw a pickaxe at me or something. But that's maybe not the worst way to be more aware than I was before. Jamie Domican wants to know, who are some of your favorite songs or bands of the decade?
So I don't listen to like tons of music, and choosing a band is really hard, but I do have a favorite song and a favorite artist. My favorite song is What Would Peggy Carter Do? And it is by Kate Nix, who is actually the wife of Ophidian in Chikara. But like, I've gotten really into her music the past, I would say, couple of years. And her song What Would Peggy Carter Do? Off of her album Demolition is my favorite song, and actually one of the songs that kind of gets me through a lot of rough days, because it's kind of like, check it out. Like, I'll link it in the profile of this episode, but it's basically like, what would Peggy Carter do? You know, she'd catch all of bad guys. She'd do it looking great. Peggy Carter is my hero, and that's why I'm here today. And like, it's kind of about like when life is getting you down, and if like your depression's trying to kill you and you can't eat and like all this stuff, like you just kind of like, you have to keep going, and you have to just like say, hey, bad guys, fuck you, and I'm great. And yeah, like it's my favorite song. And I think that she's awesome and an artist to check out, especially if you like songs about things like feminism and mental health and being badass. I don't know. She's great. She's my fave.
I feel like this is the I know you hate questions about like favorite this and that. Mine's is music, because I'm not really like a big music person. I don't know who to pick. I really like RuPaul's music, because it's just really fun and makes me tap my foot. I really like a lot of wrestling based, like Nickelback, Edge of Revolution, Survivor Series 2014, fucking anthem. Like, it got me so pumped for like Team Authority versus Team Cena. I don't even care it's wrestling based. But yeah, music, I'm not your guy. I also love The Killers, you know, they're really good. I thought Liam Gallagher's Post Oasis stuff was really good, but yeah, I'm not your music guy to give you people to check out.
I've been listening to a lot of Kate Nash stuff too, like from Glow.
The Cracks in Her Foundations.
I really love that song. It's so good. Mary Happy is another one of my favorites.
There's a really good documentary that was out on iPlayer about her, actually, where she.
Oh yeah.
It's really good if you get a chance to watch it. Last one for this episode is Stephen Bradley, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hope there will be another Gavin and Stacey special or season? I mean, Stephen, come on. It's very obvious.
I think he worded the question on a scale of 10 to 10, and like, yes, 10.
10 across the board.
Yes. But can we like not just have it be Christmas? Because I would prefer it not just be Christmas. I want to see, I don't know, a Gavin and Stacey, what's another holiday that happens in the world? Easter. I want to see an Easter special with Gavin and Stacey so that it can come in April.
An Easter special?
I was trying to think of a holiday that was far enough out that they could make one.
Okay.
But not be till next Christmas.
Okay. Easter special.
Halloween? Halloween special?
Like, you guys celebrate Halloween much more than we do.
Oh.
Okay, well, listen, we're gonna be back tomorrow on Patreon for the Overrun, where Sondra's gonna send me a couple of wrestling matches to watch that we're gonna talk about. I don't know where they are. We're gonna find out on the Overrun, and then we're gonna take the rest of your questions, of which there are 43. There's like 18, but we're gonna get through them together. It'll be a whole thing. Sondra, any last words for the faithful?
I don't know. Like, congratulations, everyone. We survived the holidays, and that's exciting. And wrestling's great and my favorite thing. And I'm really happy that I get to do this, even if, I don't know, it's been tough the past few weeks, I guess. But I'm really grateful to everyone who gets in touch with us and lets us know that what we do means something to them in their lives, because that, I don't know, makes it seem a little more worthwhile sometimes. And I'm just grateful for y'all. Like, whether you're Patreon subscribers or not, I am happy that you're listening to this. So thanks, and have a happy new year.
I mean, obviously we are more thankful to you if you are Patreon subscribers. Let's not beat around the bush here. We also are going to be doing a Retro Nitro review, which I've watched the first like third of that show, and I can't wait for Sondra and I to review it. Like, I'm so excited.
I haven't seen it yet, and like, I don't know, he's just told me a couple things that happen on the show, and like, I can't say I'm looking forward to it necessarily, but I am going to take full notes and put them on Patreon. And I haven't taken full notes for a show in a long time, because I used to take retro notes and put them on Patreon, and then it just got to be like it was taking me too long to watch the episodes to like watch an episode and take notes on it. So I just kind of stopped taking notes, and now I just try to go from my memory, which is horrendous. I'm going to take notes about Nitro, because I'm sure I'm going to have questions. And like, Kenny is usually the one who gets my, like, the only notes I take are texting Kenny when I'm watching Retro, and he's always just amused at my observations. So if you want to see the types of observations I make, sign up to Patreon at probably just like the one or two or whatever dollar level. I don't know what I'm going to put it at. I'll figure that out. But yeah, it's going to be a thing that's happening.
It's going to be a thing. But in the meantime, imagine in a world in about 1983 that you're in a nightclub in Glasgow. You're a man.
Oh, I didn't do plugs, though.
Oh, sorry. Plugs. Go ahead. Do the plugs.
Okay. Follow me on Twitter at Sondra Ruth RW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where all the Patreon stuff goes. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for clips from live events and StarCast and all the good interview content that Kenny does. And InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets to buy tickets to see JR and Kenny Omega, which if you live in the UK, go to those shows, because I can't and I'm jealous, so I can live vicariously through your Twitter. Okay, thanks, bye.
So with that in mind, imagine it's 1983 and you're a man in a nightclub in Glasgow in your early 20s, and you look over and you see a lovely woman, her name's Fiona, and she's out on the pool because she's searching. She's searching. Parentheses, looking for love. Here's Hazel Dean singing the song that my mum used to go out on the pool to. It makes me cringe and my skin crawl. But I hope you enjoy it. Bye!
Bye.